recorded KTOO. Welcome to Juno Afternoon, broadcasting live from the homelands of the Occoquan. It's Thursday, May 15th, 2025. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Gunath Cheesh, Hawa, Toksik Nusum, Salamat. Thank you for joining the conversation. You may also join us via our live stream on YouTube at ktoo.org/JPMLive or on KTOO's Facebook and Instagram pages. Today, the Last Chance Mining Museum celebrates 30 years this Saturday with several opening day special events. We'll get the details. We meet the new forest supervisor for the Tongass Forest and get an update on happenings at the Mendenhall Glacier Recreation Area from the USDA Forest Service. Bartlett is having a special open house tonight showcasing the new orthopedic clinic. We talk with Dr. Welber about this new medical option in Juneau. And we chat with Jen from the Juneau Public Libraries about summer reading and upcoming events. Those conversations coming up this hour on Juneau Afternoon. Support for Juneau Afternoon comes from Alaska Airlines Club 49. Membership information available at club49hub.com. KTOO would like to acknowledge that we broadcast from Tlingit Ani and the homelands of the Occoquan. The area where our building sits is the ancestral home of the Kléné Di, or Dog Salmon people of the Occoquan. We acknowledge those families of the Kléné Di who made use of this land and waterway for thousands of years and still cherish it as an important part of their way of life for today and for future generations. Gunath Cheesh. You are listening to community-supported Juneau Afternoon on KTOO at 104.3 Juneau, 91.7 Juneau Auk Bay, and online at ktoo.org. You can also join us behind the scenes in the studio for a sneak peek at what's going on in here on KTOO's YouTube, Facebook, or Instagram pages. The Last Chance Mining Museum, operated by the Gastineau Channel Historical Society, is celebrating 30 years with an opening day celebration this Saturday, May 17th, from noon to 5 p.m. And here to give us a preview is Renee Hughes. Gunath Cheesh, Ha'i Gudi. Thank you so much, Renee. It's a pleasure to have you in the studio today. Wasi'iti, how are you?
Good. How are you, Boston? Thank you.
Excellent on this Thursday afternoon. So much going on, including the opening of opening day, opening summer 2025. How does that feel?
It feels wonderful. It's hard to imagine. I've been on this program for 30 years now. But once again, we're going to open for the season, and we're going to celebrate on Museum Day. It's the 18th will be International Museum Day, and we try to pick the closest weekend day that we can in which to open it up to the public in our community so that we can just celebrate what is local and available for a fun afternoon.
And for those who may not know, what is the Last Chance Mining Museum?
We're the old compressor building that was a big part of when the AJ Mine was in operation. It houses the big air compressor, which was basically the heart and soul of all the power sources inside the mine. It operated all their tools and equipment.
Okay, that's cool. And where is it located?
We're located at the end of Basin Road across from where Perseverance Trailhead is. There's a short footbridge across Gold Creek, and we're a short hike up the hill. But I do have a very sweet young lady who will be operating a vehicle up and down the hill for those who need a little extra assistance.
Okay, mobile support there. That's really nice. And so I'm just getting all these details out of the way, and then we can talk about all these things happening at the celebration. So the first day you're going to be open is this Saturday, but what will the normal hours be of the museum?
Normally we're open Thursday through Monday from 2 to 5 o'clock, and we're open all the way until the middle of September, usually sometime right after Labor Day.
I see. How do you decide that in terms of the closing day? Does it just depend on traffic?
It depends a lot on traffic because a lot of people with children and such have already started going back to school, and the temperature does get a little cooler up there.
Oh,
and
I see.
So because the building is not insulated, it's a little harder to get volunteers to spend 3 hours up there without the heat.
Yeah, I see. Okay. And is it volunteer run, the whole museum?
Yes, we've been operating for 30 years with just volunteers.
Oh, that's amazing.
I have an amazing group that show up pretty regularly every week to cover a shift, and we're always looking for more. So anybody wants to come spend a wonderful afternoon in a beautiful place, I'm always looking.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask, is can people volunteer, and how would they get in touch with you? Just go to the website and find the email and such like that?
JunoHistory.org is our website.
Okay.
And it has connections that will connect you to me.
Right, it has like a contact page or something.
Or you can just leave a message up at the museum, and I will get it.
Okay, yeah, it's a wonderful thing if you're a community member and you want to volunteer at the Last Chance Mining Museum. And just to remind us, what kind of stuff are we checking out when we're up there at the Mining Museum?
We have a very interesting collection of glass maps that show the different levels inside the mountain that is all made of glass and illuminated from below, and we have that the AJ and over by the Perseverance section. So it gives you a really clear idea of how the tunnels are just totally riddled throughout the mountain.
That's really cool. Yeah, that's some fun history to look at that. Okay, so this event that's happening Saturday, May 17th, it's going from noon to 5. It's admission is free that day on opening day.
Yes, that's what we do for the community of Juneau.
Absolutely. And what's going to be happening? What kind of things are we going to be doing on Saturday to celebrate this opening?
Well, Rachel Jusler, she's been one of our volunteers, and she's also been an artist up there. And during the COVID era, she created these mosaics with tools. And so we have hidden them around the museum to create a scavenger hunt, because each of the tools are incorporated to spell out a different letter. So they spell out a couple of words, and you have to put them together with these tiles that you find hidden around the museum.
Oh, nice.
We also have Bill Janes, who has written a book it's a historical fiction about a Treadwell carpenter and his life during the early days of when the Treadwell mine was such a big, important part of our community.
Mm-hmm.
And we're really excited because he will be also volunteering for the summer. And he's been a local Douglas gentleman for all his life, and so he's well-versed in the mining history.
Bill Janes, that book's called The Treadwell Carpenter.
Yes.
And that's kind of cool. And he's going to be there signing books. Will he do a reading or anything? Or?
Well, I guess if someone would like him to do a reading, I'm sure he would be willing. But he's going to be signing books and offering them as a donation to the museum, so we're really excited to promote his book.
Now, last year, I remember you had a special contest, like a sourdough baking contest.
We did. It turned out to be really wonderful. We had some wonderful entries, and one of the entries was really very wonderful that we enjoyed. And that's because we were celebrating our 30 years. We asked her to make cinnamon rolls, and she works over at Rainbow, and she's agreed to make cinnamon rolls for us because during the gold rush, sourdough was such an important part of every celebration, even breakfast.
Wow, that's so yummy. So it'll be like sourdough cinnamon rolls?
Or, yes.
Yeah, that's what the contest was last year, was people making all different things with sourdough, right?
Yes.
So, and this is the 30th anniversary. Are there other things that you're planning to maybe do throughout the summer to sort of celebrate that 30th year, or is this the big party?
The scavenger hunt will be going on all summer long, and Bill's book will be available, and a variety of different things will be happening.
That's great. And what is the price of admission to get to the museum?
Normally, during regular days, it's $5, and we only accept cash. That's because it's such a remote location, we don't get internet service.
Ah.
And so it just doesn't work for us.
That's a good detail for people to know, that they need to have some cash. What happens if I show up and I don't have any cash, though?
A lot of times I will let you explore the grounds and the area because there is a lot of things outside and available. And sometimes people are in the area without the museum being open. And there are mine cars and things even down by the creek that people can experience.
So bring a little bit of green in your jeans for some admission to the Last Chance Mining Museum.
However, that dollar stuck in your shoe.
That's right. Have a little fiver in there. And children 12 and under, though, are free.
Are free.
So you can bring the family. If you're a
Come
Juno family, it's great.
Yeah,
it's a cool thing
gold.
To do. Yeah. Oh, you can do a little panning for gold. Bring your visitors in when they come from out of town, that kind of thing. And do you get a lot of people? I'm just curious about this. Do you get a lot of people exploring who are tourists, maybe from the ships? Do they find their way up to the mining museum?
I get quite a bit of number of people that have hiked the trail, and they see us down there and just kind of want to go explore and see what is up the hill.
Yeah. That's kind of fun. That's awesome. It's the 30th anniversary of the Last Chance Mining Museum from the Gastineau Channel Historical Society. You can find out more at their website, junohistory.org, all about about the society itself as well as the museum. There's a bunch of stuff on there. And I do have a phone number here, 586-5338. Is
yes, that the phone number? Yes, that's the museum phone number.
That's the museum phone number. So if you're interested in volunteering or just finding out more information, give Renee a call, and she can help you out, which is kind of cool.
Sounds great.
Yeah, awesome. Gwyneth Cheech for coming in today, Renee. Again, you can find out more at junohistory.org. This is Juno Afternoon on KTOO, and it's time for a savory moment.
Step in to the savory moment. Some years ago, the Sitka Hotel, an eponymous restaurant serving local seafood and handcrafted cocktails with ingredients like smoked mezcal and candied hibiscus flowers, offered a menu item that was more trifecta than meal. A skewer of grilled coho salmon, a snow-white dome of coconut rice, and an emerald bouquet of grassy broccolini, that willowy older sister of chunky, clunky broccoli. No disrespect to broccoli. Who doesn't want to pinch those chubby green cheeks? But broccolini is like a dancer on the plate. Long arms arched gracefully over proteins and starches. Its slender stems cook more quickly and are more tender. The Sitka Hotel restaurant is gone now, replaced by an Italian joint with a hearty surf and turf menu. But you can still find broccolini at the grocery store. Broccolini is expensive. A hybrid of garden broccoli and a Chinese variety called gai lan. It's labor-intensive to harvest and so pretty, you'll have to pay a little extra. Given its top-shelf character, why not give it pride of place and make it an entree? In the cookbook Around the Fire, recipes from Ox Restaurant in Portland, Oregon, you'll find a preparation for broccolini made with cream, Taleggio cheese, and toasted hazelnuts. All the recipes in this book are grill-centric, perfect for Southeast Alaska, where the weather is usually mild enough year-round to strike a match. Begin by blanching, shocking, and patting dry your broccolini. Then season with olive oil and kosher salt. Make a sauce with cream, Taleggio cheese, nutmeg, and white pepper. Grill broccolini over medium-high heat until charred. Pour a puddle of sauce on individual plates, top with crispy broccolini bouquets, and garnish with toasted hazelnuts. If you want to add rice and salmon, no one will complain. Find the recipe at savorymoment.org. From the studios of KCAW in Sitka, Alaska, I'm Beth Short Rhodes. Whatever is on your dinner table tonight, may you savor the moment.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com. This is Juno Afternoon from your listener-supported public media station, KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. You can also join us on the live stream on KTOO's YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram pages for a behind-the-scenes sneak peek in the studio and see what's going on in here. The Tongass National Forest has a new forest supervisor. That and some updates on the Mendenhall Glacier Recreation Area from the USDA Forest Service. Welcome now to Studio 2K, dedicated to Carolyn Hobbs Peterson. I have Monique Nelson, Forest Supervisor for the Tongass National Forest. Gunachish, wasiiti, how are you?
Hey, Boston, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Of course. And then Barb Miranda, it's been a while.
It's been too long. I think the last time we talked, we were talking about the Capitol Christmas tree.
I think we were talking about the Capitol Christmas tree. Yeah, that was a really great project, too. That was so fun. And yeah, we've been having the Forest Service on to talk about the Tongass Revitalization Plan, or what is it called overall? What is it? I'm testing you now, Monique.
The Tongass Plan Revision.
Plan Revision, that's what it is. So the Tongass Plan Revision. And last we heard, I think it was that there had been some first iterations of the comments, right? So where are we in this revision plan? What are we doing right now?
Yeah, you're right. So earlier this year, we released a draft assessment.
Yes.
Where we talked about the status of our resources across the forest, and we offered that up for public comment. So we've been working on those assessments for the past few months, incorporating and responding to those public comments and comments from agencies and organizations, and we're working to finalize them. So we expect to finalize them early this summer and let people know that they can take another look, and that's the first major step of the forest plan revision process. So we're looking forward to wrapping that up.
Because it's a multi-year thing, right?
That's right. Yes, it's a very big undertaking. So it'll be, you know, we anticipate 4 years or more, likely more.
Wow, that's so cool. But let's talk about you, Monique Nelson. So you're the new forest supervisor for the Tongass National Forest. What does that mean, forest supervisor?
Well, it means that I have the great honor and responsibility of sharing leadership for 17 million acres of the Tongass National Forest.
That's a big backyard.
Indeed.
Right? Wow.
And sharing leadership with Barb and other people at the Forest Service, but also with people across Southeast Alaska, and acknowledging that it's a big responsibility to share for the lands that the Tlingit and Haida and Tsimshian have been stewarding for millennia.
Now, were you already working at the Forest Service and you got this promotion, or are you new to the Forest Service?
Well, I've been working for the Forest Service for about 20 years in places across the country, but my family moved to Alaska, to Juneau, about 5 years ago.
Okay.
And I've been working primarily in planning, so
okay,
behind
planning.
The scenes.
So what are you going to be doing now?
Well,
are you still figuring that out?
No. There's a great deal to do.
Yeah.
You know, a big part of it is working with the people on the Tongass.
Mm.
And so we have about 300 employees who work on a variety of projects, right?
Yeah.
All sorts of land stewardship projects, from wildlife habitat to stream restoration and timber and recreation. So providing guidance and oversight for all of those projects and support to the people that that work on the projects.
Now, you said you've been in the Forest Service for 20 years or so. How did you get started? How did you decide that that was going to be the place where you were going to do some work in your career?
Well, I started as an ecologist,
okay.
And gosh, I've been working for the Forest Service my whole adult life. I started in college doing research and monitoring in the Southeast and in the Pacific Northwest, and then I moved on to working as an ecologist for the Washington office in Colorado and Washington, D.C., and then I got into planning because that's the way I found I was able to get things done, right? If you can get into the nitty-gritty and know how to, like, navigate all of the complicated processes, then it enables people to be able to meet their goals. And so I've been in planning for, I don't know, about 10 years now. And that's what I came to the Tongass to do. I was the Tongass Forest Planner for a couple of years, and then the planning director for the region for the past 3 years.
Wow.
But I still keep my ecologist roots. That's really where my passion is.
And did that start, I'm just curious, like when you were a little kid, like were you just running around the forest? Did you just love the outdoors? Is that where your love came from?
Absolutely. I mean, it started mostly with flowers, right? But, but then evolved and matured from there. Yeah, absolutely an interest in love for the outdoors.
Well, welcome to your new position for a supervisor. I hope to have you back on and talk about this Tongass revision plan more as it continues on and on, and figure out what those next stages are for the public to know about. That's really cool that we have that happening, right? And we've talked about it before on the show. It's a thing that happens every, is it 25 years? They have to redo the plan or something like that, and it takes a while, and it's just all about what's going to be happening with the forest for the next 25 years, right? That kind of thing, yeah.
That is a good summary. We aim for a shorter time frame, but 25 is probably the truth.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's how long it's taken us to initiate this round of it. So.
Yeah. And Barb Miranda, Deputy Forest Supervisor, let's talk a little bit about the Mendenhall Recreation Area and the Visitor Center, has been in the news a lot over the last couple of months. We don't need to get into too much of that. What I really want to know is, how's it going?
Yeah, thanks for asking. You know, we have been in the news because there's been a lot of changes going on across the country with the federal government. And we, you know, the big news has been that we've lost quite a bit of the people that actually worked at the Mendenhall. But I'm really happy to report that through the partners that we have with Tlingit and Haida and Discovery Southeast. So Tlingit and Haida has cultural ambassadors out there. Discovery Southeast runs the bookstore. And then we have staffing coming from the regional office here in the federal building, the Juneau Ranger District, and the Admiralty Ranger District to help fully staff the Mendenhall. So we've got at least 5 people out there on a daily basis. We're open from 10 to 5. Sunday through Friday. So we're meeting the needs at the visitor center for the cruise ship industry. And then, of course, the Mendenhall Glacier Recreation Area itself is open from 6 a.m. till midnight. So every single day.
Yeah.
So people can get out there and walk the trails and experience the lake and the glacier and all those things with, you know, as they have in the past.
Now, did Saturdays used to be a day that you were open, and that's just one of the days you've decided to close because of staffing?
Yeah, we have a little limited capacity, right? So you let lot less people that are actually working there. So one of the ways we've adjusted is choosing one day to be closed and then having the visitor center itself just be open from 10 to 5. So one shift instead of 2 or 3, which used to be our norm.
Yeah. And so I'm curious, too, about, I guess, the morale or how the employees are handling their daily life at the moment.
Yeah. Yeah, well, every day is a new day, right? And visitor season's just started. We're all feeling it if we live here in Juneau. But I got to say that the morale has been terrific out there, talking to the ranger and the folks that are working at the visitor center and the people that are going in and assisting for 1 or 2 days shifts a week. They're all really excited to be there. And I can't speak highly enough of the cultural ambassadors that are out there on a daily basis imparting knowledge about the Tlingit and Haida culture and the fact that the Mendenhall Glacier Recreation Area has been the backdrop of their lives since time immemorial. Mm-hmm. It's been really amazing, you know, in these times that are difficult, how our partners and our staff have banded together to make a successful start of the visitor season.
Before it was even called Mendenhall.
Yes, way before.
Way before. Yeah. So how many people will, does it include, what I'm curious about is how many people will be there each day, Sunday through Friday, right? Because Saturday they're closed. How many people will be there? And is that a combination of Forest Service employees as well as the Tlingit and Haida Cultural Ambassadors and Discovery Southeast folks?
Excellent question. So we'll have 5 Forest Service people there on a daily basis when the visitor center is open. And even on Saturday, we're shooting to have 2 or 3 people on site to help direct visitors and ensure that if there's wildlife, AKA bears, that are on site, that we can do some crowd management. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we have 3 to 5 Forest Service staff there on a daily basis. And then Discovery Southeast, of course, has their bookstore open, and the cultural ambassadors. How many cultural ambassadors do we have this year? I'm not really sure. I think 8 to 10 is what they were shooting for hiring, and they're there on Monday through Friday.
Oh, okay. Yep. Excellent. Yeah. I think they're going to come on soon and talk about their program that they do
so
out
good.
There. Because I think it's really awesome that they do that. And like you said, impart the wisdom that has been there for time immemorial. It's really cool to have that happen. So what else do you need us to know about the Mendenhall? I love that the recreation area is open 6 to 12. I'm curious about that. When you don't have people at the recreation center, I guess I'm just – are there safety tips? Because you just mentioned bears.
Sure.
So what should I be on the lookout if I'm going out there like after 5 o'clock? Like if I head over there at 7 p.m., what should I be aware of?
Well, that there are bears frequenting the area. There was just a black bear with three little baby cubs seen there last Friday. And so keep your distance and watch, you know, with respect and humbleness. And then take care of the land. I mean, we love having the recreation area as our backyard here in Juneau. And just make sure you leave it better than you found it. And that means packing it in and packing it out and just being kind to the other visitors that are out there. There's so many people from all across the world that flock and come to the to the Mendenhall. So really just sharing the enjoyment of that really special place.
Yeah,
and Monique wants to say something.
I do. I want to take the opportunity to remind people to keep their dogs on a leash so that we can protect the nesting terns at the Mendenhall.
Oh.
It's a really important thing to remember, to have your dog on a leash, both to be safe around bears as well as to protect the seabirds and shorebirds.
Awesome. Yeah. That's so good. Well, thank you so much, Gwyneth Cheesh, for coming in today and telling us about it. Congrats, Monique, on your new position as the Forest Supervisor for the Tongass National Forest. And Barb, all the best of luck for everyone working out at the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center. Glad to know that we're up to at least 5 folks a day. And you said it's Sunday through Friday from 9 to 5?
10 to 5 10 is when the
5.
Visitor Center is open.
The Visitor Center is open, but you can visit the park, of course, from 6 a.m. to midnight.
Yep.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Gwyneth Cheesh, for coming in today. I really appreciate it. And hopefully we'll see you next month. Maybe we'll talk a little forest revision plan or something like that.
That would
we'll
be
figure
great.
It out.
Thanks, Boston.
I really appreciate it. You're listening to Juneau Afternoon on KTOO.
Hanson Gress. Ka eat with the shoe ye, we kashuk a ye tin. Jin kat ka ke jin ta khanakaya ha anikak. Gunish cheese.
Let's have a star party. This is Steve Kosis with the Reedrake Planetarium. I'm going to talk about the moons of our solar system. Now, counting our Earth's moon, it turns out there's 418 moons in our solar system. If we include the 5 moons of Pluto, that's 423. So do a little breakdown of that. The planet Mercury, closest to the sun, has no moons. The planet Venus, which is the hottest planet because of its carbon dioxide atmosphere, has no moons. Earth has one moon. Mars has 2 moons. Now, Jupiter, the largest of the planets, has 97 moons. And Saturn, which is the second largest planet, has 274 moons. Uranus has 28 moons, and Neptune has 16 moons. And like I said, the dwarf planet Pluto has 5 moons. So that's a total of 423 moons in our solar system. Realize that most of these moons are quite small. The largest of all the moons is Ganymede, which is actually larger than our moon and larger than the planet Mercury. And it's one of the 4 moons of Jupiter. 4 out of 97 that were discovered by Galileo in the 17th century. And it's interesting, those moons, they're also called the Galilean moons, Ganymede, Io, Europa, and Callisto. 3 of them have an icy surface, and below the surface is believed to be an ocean of liquid water. In fact, in the case of Ganymede, it's believed that the volume is greater than all the oceans of the Earth. This is Steve Kosis with the Marie Drake Planetarium. Our public shows are on our website, mariedrakeplanetarium.org. Thank you.
You're listening to Juno Afternoon from Studio 2K at KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Today, May 15th, Bartlett Orthopedic Specialists, a new Juno Orthopedic Clinic, is opening. It has an open house. It is happening today. It's an open house from 5 to 7 p.m. You can meet the surgeons and learn more about the services that are available. And joining us now for a little preview of both the clinic and the open house tonight is Dr. Eric Welber. I'm going to cheese. Wasiti. How are you, Eric?
Good. Thanks for having us.
Or should I call you Dr. Welber?
Either is fine. Very casual.
What do your patients call you?
Dr. Welber.
Dr. I love that. And I also have Aaron Harden, who's the Community Relations Director for Bartlett Regional Hospital. Aaron Wasiti, how are you?
I'm well. Thank you.
Thank you for being here. So I'm going to call you Dr. Eric. How about
that's
that?
Fine.
I like that. That's good. So you are this new – tell me a little bit before we talk about the open house. Tell me a little bit about this new orthopedic clinic. Is it just opening or has it been open for a little bit or –
So we opened in January, and what's great about our clinic is we are really a orthopedic specialty-based clinic. So all of our providers have fellowship-trained training in a subspecialty, a specific part of orthopedics. So we're the only clinic with a fellowship-trained joint replacement specialist or upper extremity specialist or trauma specialist.
Okay, so for those who don't know, what is orthopedics?
Orthopedics is the treatment of bones, joints, and muscles. You can think about it mostly as like extremity surgery.
So, okay. So it's not just legs necessarily.
Not just legs. In fact, my partner is a fellowship-trained upper extremity specialist. So he does shoulders, elbow, wrist, and hand.
Okay, that's good to know. For some reason in my brain, I always thought of it as like the legs.
Yes.
You know, like the ortho, like your pod, the bipod or whatever it is. So, and I have up a little graphic here for those who are on the live stream, but I just wanted to mention. So there's Dr. Eric Welber, and then there's Dr. Jason Gray, as well as Tyler Smith, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and you were just talking about, were you talking about Tyler or Jason?
Dr. Gray, yeah, Jason.
Dr. Gray, okay. Oh, yeah, I see it there. Hand and upper extremity surgeon.
Yeah.
Okay.
He was too busy in clinic to join us today.
That's okay. So now, was this a need, and I don't know if either one of you needs to answer this, but was this a need that Bartlett needed to fill? Because what were people doing before the clinic opened?
I think there was a need for it. So, I mean, we heard and the hospital heard time and time again that patients wanted to seek out fellowship-trained surgeons. And at the time, people weren't able to see fellowship-trained surgeons for joint replacement or upper extremity surgery here in Juneau. So a lot of patients were going to Anchorage for this type of care or to Seattle. But we really felt like offering this to the community here locally was really important. And so the hospital supported that. We really wanted to provide it. And so now we can, patients here, the community here can see a fellowship-trained specialist who does a lot of these surgeries and then also have all their follow-up here locally. You know, don't have to go to Anchorage or Seattle to get that level of care.
That's excellent. And what is a fellowship-trained specialist?
Great question. So medical training is a really, really long course.
Yeah.
You do high school and then you do medical school, which is 4 years, and then you do 5 years of residency training. And despite all that training, if you want to be a specialist, you do an additional year of fellowship where you just do surgeries in that specific field.
I see.
So, for example, I did a joint replacement fellowship. So I do hip and knee replacements. And during my fellowship year, I did over 500 cases, just hip and knee replacements.
Whoa. In a year you did that?
Yes.
That's amazing. Okay, now here's, this is a different kind of a question, but you don't look like you've spent 12 years or whatever it is in training. You look about 26 to me. I know you're not, but you must get that a lot.
I probably spent too much time inside the hospital, don't have any sun damage. way too much time working.
I see. Yeah. Get it. I get it. A lot of time working. Do you get to? And so you came from Anchorage.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you hadn't lived
in Anchorage.
Born and raised in Anchorage. Okay, so you hadn't lived in Juneau before.
No.
But so, you'd been seeing patients up there who'd come from here.
Yeah, so after my training, I actually worked here for a little bit and then ended up going, moving up to Anchorage. But I still was seeing a ton of patients from Juneau, quite a few. And I really felt like offering that again in Juneau was really important.
So did that idea, that with you and Dr. Gray, was that sort of this, was this a scheme that you thought up to be able to open this clinic down here? Did you want to move to Juneau?
I love it here. I'm a born and raised Alaskan, and I really felt like I really believed in this vision of being able to provide true fellowship trained specialty training here. And so I was, you know, I was very excited about opening this clinic. And then Dr. Gray also kind of shared that optimism and felt like the community could really benefit from it. So he joined up as well. And
was he from Anchorage as well?
No, he's from Louisiana originally,
okay.
But he's been up in Anchorage for the last 6 years.
I see.
And our main practice is based there.
Okay, so you still travel back and mm-hmm. forth between
yep,
the
yep,
two cities.
Absolutely. I come down here twice a month. I spend about a third of my time here. But yeah, I also run a practice in Anchorage.
In Anchorage. Okay, that's awesome. Mm-hmm. Well, we're happy to have you here. And also, just big props for being born and raised here and then, you know, going outside and getting your training and coming back and bringing it back to Alaska. I think that's really valuable that we have that we have that option for people or that the people make that choice is what I mean. Mm-hmm. So let's talk a little bit about this open house. It's happening tonight at 5 p.m., Erin.
Yes, it is. Yeah, on the hospital campus, we're really excited to invite the community to join us now that the practice has been open for a few months. So folks can drive up on Hospital Drive, you know it well, follow the signs around to the back of the campus there, and the new orthopedics clinic is in 3250, I think is our address, Hospital Drive. We'll have a bunch of signage out, but we're going to open up the doors. We'll have Dr. Welber there. Dr. Gray will be available to join us. We'll have some board members, great food, conversation, just a chance for people to see the new clinic space, meet the surgeons, talk to them, you know, take home a rat card if they want to learn more about them and their specialties and consider if they're, you know, someone they might want to meet with for bone and joint care. So, we're really excited to open our doors and invite people into the space tonight.
Yeah, that's really cool. And I think I found that building once when I was lost on the campus.
Yes.
And I was looking for the office of something else, and which was actually still connected to the hospital, but I was on those back buildings. And so it's one of those back buildings back there.
It is, yeah. Basically, yeah. I've been telling folks, if you follow the signs to the emergency department and drive around the back and park, you'll see the signs, balloons. You're also welcome to park in the front of the campus. There's certainly much more parking there. And then, just follow the walking path signs. But
great.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's tonight at 5 o'clock from 5 to 7 over at Bartlett. You can meet the orthopedic specialist of the new orthopedic clinic, which is really cool. Now, people can go and find out how they can get care, but is it something that I can make an appointment with just this office, or do I have to get referred to you all through my primary care physician?
No, you can call the office.
Yeah. You can call and be like, hey, I've got some joint issue or something and come in and see and get a consultation or something and figure out what's going on.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, that's really cool. That's awesome. Well, I really appreciate you guys coming in and talking about this. It's fantastic that this is available here in Juneau because one of the hardest things here is getting care and having to travel outside for that for a lot of different things. I had to go down to Seattle for a liver check thing. There was a machine that they needed to use on me that was only in Seattle that isn't here in Juneau. And I went to Seattle and I went to Virginia Mason Hospital. And I literally was in the room for about 90 seconds. That's how fast the machine did the test on me. And I was like, why don't, and it was a little tiny machine. Yeah. And I was like, why don't we have one of these in Juneau?
Yeah. So we're trying to bring the machine to you now.
Yes.
So.
That's great.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate that, especially for the orthopedic. We need to keep working on getting more of those things here in Juneau. Dr. Eric Welber and Aaron Harden, thank you so much, Gunatjesh, for coming in today and telling us all about it. I really appreciate you being here. Tonight, 5 o'clock at Bartlett Regional Hospital for the Bartlett Orthopedic Specialist Open House. Really cool. I like that. Gunatjesh.
If you think I like you, I do. Nothing that I've tried can untangle me from you. Drive me so wild. Eyes glued to your smile now. It's been so long that you are catching on.
Ashley Young. That song is called Secrets. She performed that here in the studio on the red carpet stage, I think a little over a year ago. So good. So good. That was like a premiere. She hadn't done that song that often. So that's really cool. That's Ashley Young here on Juno Afternoon. You are listening to community-supported Juno Afternoon on KTOO 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Auk Bay, and online at ktoo.org. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. And now, time for our monthly check-in with the Juno Public Libraries, and I've got Jen Gardner in the house this month. Gunatjesh, ha yigudi. Thank you so much, Jen, for coming in on this happy Thursday. How are you? Wasiyati.
I am doing well. Thanks, as always, for having me.
Of course. It's so good. So let's get started. I want to first talk about, we began to think about it in the last time you were here, but summer reading.
Yeah, registration has begun for our summer reading program. We won't officially start the program until May 24th, so we won't be accepting completed games until the program officially starts. But you can register at any of our library locations, as well as online at juno.org/library. Any age is welcome to register and get materials. So we've got some giveaways, some bags, pencils that are also dice, which is pretty neat, some bookmarks, and then, of course, our reading game, which comes in two sizes this year. There's a mini pocket-sized version and a full-sized version. So whatever works best for you. We encourage families to all register together and do the challenges together. But also, if you are an adult that just really enjoys reading and doing activities and getting chances to win cool prizes like local gift cards, please sign up. We are encouraging any and all ages to do it this year.
And is there, how does the game work?
Yeah, so the game has basically different books that you check off after reading your choice of either 30 minutes at a time or one full book. So depending on the age and the types of books you're reading,
right,
you can choose which challenge makes more sense for you. So, you know, there's a series of books that you'll check off as you either read in 30-minute increments or full books. And then there's also stars that you check off when you complete your choice of the activities from the backside of the game. And so there are things that we think are going to be really applicable to all ages. It can be something like going to a library program or visiting the Friends of the Library bookstore or playing a board game, having a family member or elder tell you a story about their childhood. There's all kinds of ideas on the back. And we encourage people to also use it as a jumping off point. So if there's something similar that you want to use and kind of tailor the challenges to meet your needs, we just want to get people reading and engaging with their community and learning and challenging themselves. And that's kind of the whole goal.
And with friends and or family too, because you can, it's a really great way for parents to read along with their kids
if they're
reading whatever book they're reading. And because the books you're talking about on the game aren't books that you're saying they have to read. It's any book you're reading, but
anything,
the book is like an icon, right?
We don't care what you're reading. You can read a cereal box if you want to. you can read graphic novels. You can read audiobooks, absolutely count, ebooks, whatever makes sense for your life. We just want to find a way to encourage people to be engaging with stories and books and their community and their families in that process.
I love that. And so registration is open for that now. You can, of course, as Jen said, go to juno.org/library and you can find out all about that. Okay, so then always there's tons of events happening at the libraries. Let's go over what we've got coming up.
Yeah, so tomorrow we've got a big one and we are hoping for sunshine, but we are preparing for rain for our first Bike to the Library Day.
Oh.
So we thought we would tie into the National Bike to Work and School Day, and we are doing our own version of that, Bike to the Library Day, in collaboration with Juneau Parks and Rec. And so from 3 to 5 p.m. tomorrow, Friday, outside of the Valley Library, we will have a pop-up tent set up. And for anyone, all ages, who bike to the library, we're going to have some treats. Several local businesses have provided some prizes and some treat giveaways. And then we'll also have a photo booth set up. So anyone who comes and takes a picture with their bike helmet on to promote safety, you know,
right,
all about
right.
that. So a bike helmet photo at the photo booth gets you entered to win some grand prizes. We've got a bike pump that we're giving away and some gift cards to local businesses as well.
Wow, that's a cool event. I love that.
Oh, and one more really exciting piece that that we added in last minute. We are going to have free cotton candy at the event for anyone who bikes as well.
Free cotton. So you're working off the calories and you're adding them back on.
Well,
I love it.
You know, you may as well have a treat for gearing up, getting on your bike.
You got to get a reward.
Exactly.
I mean, that's so cool. What a thing. And that's the Valley Library only, right?
Yes, just the Valley Library from 3 to 5 p.m. tomorrow, and all ages. So anyone who wants to stop by, it doesn't matter how far you bike. We have already gotten some questions about what if my kids just have scooters, anything that's in the spirit of biking. So, you know, non-motorized, ideally, unless that's part of your needs for adaptability. But if you are, you know, tailoring that to kind of be in the spirit of Bike Day, but don't have a traditional bike, that's okay.
Yeah, absolutely. That's really cool. Bike Day, Bike to the Library tomorrow from 3 to 5. Okay, cool. What else is up?
Yeah, we have a lot of events coming up for summer reading. But before we get into that, we also have a couple of small group sessions for library tech support. So on May 20th and 23rd, there are going to be some opportunities at two different libraries to have a small group kind of question and answer session about library technology. So that's anything from getting on the Wi-Fi, using the printing system, sending faxes, using our catalog to place holds on books, anything that involves library technology. So if that is something that you've had questions about, or maybe you're interested in learning how to use, there will be some small group opportunities May 20th and 23rd. And we've got some handouts at the desk of the libraries right now that you can go pick up and get more information about those.
Because you have a lot of tech, right? You got a lot of different things.
Yeah, we do. We've got projectors and smart screens in the meeting room. So we get a lot of questions about those. And then also a lot of questions about just like using our computers and how to print from your own devices, from the public computers. So this is a really good chance if that's something that is a little overwhelming for you, or maybe you just want to get a little bit more of a detailed explanation about using some of that technology.
That's really cool. It also makes me think about things, you know, because things, when you think of the library, a lot of times you think of books only, but you guys have DVDs and CDs and all kinds of things you can check out.
We do. We've got board games, we've got media, magazines, and then all kinds of things digitally as well. So we have a whole Alaska Digital Library where you can get ebooks and audiobooks. We have all kinds of databases. So if you go to our website and look at the e-resources, there's things for ancestry, there's things for homework help for students and job prep. LinkedIn Learning is free to access for our patrons. There's so many things that you can get for free with your library card.
Right, let's keep going for events here.
Okay.
So I see you have books. I want to get to those too.
Yeah, I do have a fun stack of books as well. So we have a chess tournament coming up on May 24th. We have our monthly game day coming up in Douglas on May 25th. And then we'll be getting into our summer reading program events. So on May 25th, we are going to have a guest magician coming in. So Jeff Evans is going to be doing a magic show at the Valley Library. That's May 25th at 12:30 p.m. And I think that'll be a very popular event. And then the ever popular Fairy House Workshop. This is the third year that we were doing this event. And because of the popular demand, we are actually splitting it into two sessions this year. So the family event is going to be on May 31st, and the adult event is going to be on June 1st. And we will have separate supplies for both events. So don't worry if you're in the adult session, either there will be new materials for you on that day as well.
I love that. And of course, for all that, you can find the information on the calendar and other details on the events at juno.org/library.
And I will make a note too, our youth services team has been really diligently going into all of the elementary and middle schools to do presentations about summer reading so that all of the students there know what's available to them. And so if you are a parent that has students in the public schools, middle school or elementary school, they should be going home with a 2025 summer reading program pamphlet that lists all of the upcoming events for kids
excellent.
For the summer.
That's cool. Okay. So let's get to some of these book recommendations real quick here. What do you got?
Yeah. So recently I had a request from a patron about wanting to find more novels for adults that had illustrations. And so Brandon Sanderson is one author who has some illustrations in his novels. And there are a lot of graphic novels for adults, but there aren't as many illustrated full novels as there are for youth. So I just wanted to share this book, Slewfoot by Brom. So Brom has a whole bunch of books that all have illustrations inside. And so he is kind of this dark fantasy author and illustrator. And there's some really cool illustrations. I was looking him up today, and I learned that he was also a concept artist for Magic the Gathering, the board game. And he designed some video game cover art for World of Warcraft 2014, the video game.
Wow.
So he's done a lot of different things, but we have several of his books that have these really interesting kind of dark illustrations. So if anyone else is looking for kind of that unique blend of fiction that's geared for adults but has illustrations included, Brahm might be a good fit author for you.
Great. Probably have time for one more.
Okay. And how about Suitor Armor?
Suitor Armor, I love it.
So this one I just stumbled upon today. It is a romantasy graphic novel. Mm-hmm. So romantasy has been very popular, the blend of romance and fantasy.
Okay.
And this is a graphic novel about an outcast secret fairy who falls in love with an enchanted suit of armor.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. And what did you call it? Romantasy?
Romantasy. It's kind of that crossover genre between romance and fantasy.
Okay.
And in this case, this is a graphic novel romantasy.
Very cool. Thank you so much, Jen Gardner from the Juno Public Libraries. You can find out more at juno.org/library. Really appreciate you coming in today, Jen. Thanks so much. And that's going to do it for today's Juno Afternoon. On tomorrow's show, we look ahead to the upcoming Troll Fest. Plus, the Alaska Robotics Minicon is happening this Saturday. And Artemis Sportswomen have a bevy of summer activities in store. Programming support for Juno Afternoon comes from listeners and viewers like you and Alaska Airlines Club 49, Hanson Grass, and Heritage Coffee Roasting Company. I'm Boston Christopher, producer and host of the program, with help today from Aaron Tripp. Gonna cheese.